Bible chapter that teaches us probably the most important lesson we can learn, and that is the lesson of faith. It's a powerful treatise on faith, what faith is, and I think even more importantly, how faith is lived out. So if you know the 11th chapter, you know that it starts out with a powerful, profound, simple yet profound definition of faith. The author writes, the pastor writes, now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. What a great definition of faith. Faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance of what we do not see. We looked closely at this definition a few weeks ago and we said some important things. We said that this is talking about a faith in the one true God, not faith in faith. Faith in faith is empty. Faith in the one true God is powerful. And we said this is a faith, therefore, that brings substance. And we can come before God and before the world with confidence. We said that it is a solid conviction in the one true God. It is a dynamic force in our lives and in our world. And that this kind of faith is evident, it's proven, through an obedient life. And it's experienced as righteousness, being right or at peace with God. And what I love about the 11th chapter of Hebrews, that after giving this definition, the author then lists a long list of characters from the Old Testament who he says are examples of how we live by faith. Because that's what faith is about. It's not just a definition, it's a way of living. It's a way of experiencing our lives daily. It's a way of experiencing not only this world, but certainly experiencing eternity as well. And so there's a number of individuals that are mentioned by name, others that he just mentions in passing, the prophets and others. But today I want to go to the eighth verse of the 11th chapter. Where beginning in the 8th, and we'll read some portions of the chapter, he begins to talk about people that you know pretty well, Abraham and Sarah. Abraham and Sarah are the pinnacle heroes of the Jewish faith. Abraham is known as the patriarch, one of the, I would say, the key founding father of the faith and the resultant Christian faith. The Apostle Paul refers to Abraham as the man of faith. And the pastor here uses three key experiences in the life of Abraham and Sarah to illustrate that truly faith is the reality of things hoped for. Abraham and Sarah are powerful examples of faith that is the reality of things hoped for. As I read this portion, we're going to look at verses 8 through 12 and then skip down to 17 through 19. I realize there are a number of lessons for us about faith. And that's the whole point of this, isn't it? The author is saying, the pastor is saying, look at Abraham and Sarah and learn from them. Let this be a lesson to you about faith. So what are the lessons that we get from the experience, the life of Abraham and Sarah? Let me suggest five. I would say there's probably many more. But the first one I'm going to suggest is this. Faith, that is, faith in the one true God, often calls for bold action. Faith in the one true God calls us to be bold in our life. We certainly see this, don't we, in Abraham and Sarah. Not always, as we'll see later, but at key times in their lives. So we pick up in Hebrews 11 and verse 8. We read, first of all, about Abraham and Sarah's call to move from Ur, the land of their family, the land of their experience, the land of their home, their common culture, to move to Canaan, the promised land. In 8, by faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as an inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land, like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to a city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. And then picking up in the 11th verse, the pastor brings Sarah into the mix. And by faith, even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. And then if you go down to verse 17, he continues with Abraham. You know, some of the others, he just gives a verse or two, but he wants to really express about Abraham. And so in 17, he gives us another example from Abraham's life. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned." Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead. And so in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the grave. The call to leave home to go to a land that he did not know. The challenge on both Abraham and Sarah to have children much, much later in life. And then the call to nearly sacrifice his son Isaac. I would say those are pretty good examples, wouldn't you, view of bold action. Faith in the one true God calls for boldness. Let's look just a little bit more closely. Consider the call to Canaan. It says, when called. That's an important statement there. When called. Abraham did not simply set out on a whim. He didn't wake up one morning and say, wouldn't it be fun to see something new? You know, we do that in our day and age. It's very unlikely that Abraham did that. He didn't set out on a whim. It was a very definitive and definite call. You can read about it in Genesis chapter 12. In the first verse of Genesis chapter 12, the Lord had said to Abram, "Go from your country, your people, your father's household, to a land I will show you." It was a call which suggests that Abraham had a clear choice. Abraham had a clear choice to go or not to go. And that's where boldness comes in, isn't it? When we have a clear choice in life, then boldness in God is saying, I will respond, I will answer the call that he's placed upon my life. When called, it says, to a place. Not only did Abraham not start out on a whim, but he wasn't wandering aimlessly in the desert, in the wilderness. He was called to a place. Now, we're told that he didn't know this place. It doesn't mean that he didn't know there was a place. It means that he didn't know what this place was like. He had never been there before. We can assume he never had talked to anyone else who had been there before. Maybe he'd heard a few rumors about the land, but he really didn't know anything about it. He knew this, though, there was a place. And I thought, what a great example of faith. There are so many times in our lives when we really don't know much about our future. Right? As a matter of fact, in a way, we don't know anything about our future. We think we do. I think I do. You think you do. But truly, we really don't. But it's in those times when we say, although we don't really know what's out there, we know this. God is there. And we know that whatever our future holds, God will be there. So Abraham didn't know many details about this land. He did know this. God was going to go with him, and God was going to be there when he got there. That to me is the promise that we have today. We don't really know what the future holds, but we know that God goes with us. We know it's a place and that he will be there when we arrive. He was called to a place. And don't you love it says, he obeyed and he went. He obeyed and he went. One of the things that we notice in studying the life of Abraham is that Abraham was obedient to go. His obedience was immediate and it was active because it was born not out of fear, it was born out of faith. Indeed, in Genesis chapter 11 and verse 31, a very interesting verse. Let me just read it for you. This is just before the story of Abraham actually moving on. It says, Terah took his son Abram, so Terah was Abraham's father, and his grandson Lot, son of Aaron, and his daughter-in-law Sarah, the wife of his son Abram, and together they set out from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to Canaan, to go to the promised land. But the last line of that verse is this, but when they came to Haran, they settled there. And so actually in chapter 12, and verse 1, or at the beginning of chapter 12, you see Abraham in Haran. And this, there's many different ways of understanding this verse. You can read the various commentaries. But one of the ways that I find intriguing is this. Was it that actually Abraham's father received the call? Maybe God had spoken to Abraham's father. But he failed. He only went so far and he stopped. Why? We can only speculate. He stopped. The journey wasn't completed. And the call was renewed to Abraham. Now, I can't back that up with absolute scripture. It's just a theory, but it's an interesting thought, isn't it? That sometimes God calls us and we don't make it all the way. We stop. We're distracted. We're discouraged. We're afraid. And we don't go all the way that God has called us to go. He was called, and he was called to a place, and he obeyed, and he went. And then, of course, I know that you probably remember the story of his call to sacrifice Isaac. Now, there was bold action. God had promised Abraham that he would have so many children that you couldn't count the number of them. But so far as we know, he's only had one. And that one, Isaac, God has said to Abraham, I want you to give him back to me. Sacrifice him back to me. And you know the story of Abraham and Isaac starting out and going up into the mountain with all intentions, it seems, to sacrifice his son as he has been directed. It was a definitive, it was a clear call, and it was proven by obedience. In Genesis, you can read the story, we won't, but you can read the story in Genesis 22, chapter 22. I love the third verse, which says that after Abraham received the call, early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. Early the next morning, not next week, next month, not after thinking about it, conferring with everybody, when the call was clear, he responded. Faith in the one true God calls us to bold action. Another thing I note about Abraham's faith, as referred to here in Hebrews 11, is that faith's reward is not always immediately evident. Let me go to verse 9 again. It says, by faith he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign land. He lived in tents. The picture that the pastor is drawing is this. Abraham has received the call. The call is clear, but it must be frightening. It must be a challenge to think about picking up and moving away from all that he knew and going to a land that maybe he'd only heard of, but he'd never been there before. And then to make it worse, when he arrived, surprise, surprise, there were no banners saying, "Welcome, Abraham," right? There were no fancy houses waiting for him. There were no servants waiting there to welcome him in and wash his feet after a hard many days journey. He ended up in this land, and he was a stranger. He was a stranger. He was living in a culture that he didn't know, he didn't understand. He was suddenly probably the big boss back in Haran and Ur, but here he is in this promised land, and he's just in the way. Even worse, he's living in a tent. Doesn't even have a house that he could call his own. I wonder what Abraham thought. Because you know, sometimes when we hear the call and we do what is right, we secretly think there should be a reward at the end of it, right? We might never admit that to anyone. But we think if we do right and good, somebody's going to pat us on the back. Somebody's going to reward us. God is going to say, what a great job. But I think probably most, just judging by the nods I see this morning, most of us here have lived long enough to know it doesn't work like that, does it? Often, we follow God and we don't see the rewards immediately. Things don't look the way they should look. And that can discourage us. What kept Abraham going? Well, we'll see what kept him going so that he wasn't discouraged. But we must remember this, that faith's reward is not immediately evident. Let me read a passage from Acts chapter 7 and verse 5. Where Luke, in writing Acts, also uses the picture of Abraham. He says, he gave him no inheritance. That is, God gave Abraham no inheritance. Not even the ground, enough ground to set his foot on. But God promised that he and his descendants after him would possess the land, even though at the time Abraham had no child. So the picture is, he was feeding on the promise. Not on the reward, but on the promise. And I've learned, lived long enough to know that that's how you live by faith. You don't feed on the reward. Now you keep your eye on the reward. You know there is a reward. What is the reward? Eternal life with God in God's presence. But you don't feed on the reward. You feed on the promise. You feed on his presence. And that carries you through. Faith's reward is not immediately evident. Thirdly, the third thing I note is that faith works on its own schedule. You probably know that as well, don't you? Verse 11, by faith, even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. Sarah longed to be a mother, yet for most of her life she was unable to conceive. Now that was difficult. If you want to be a mother, I can only imagine how difficult it could be. In a traditional culture, so much more so. But even worse than that, her husband has said to her, God has promised that we'll have more children than the sand on the seashore or the stars in the sky. And she can't even have one. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the struggle that Sarah had? What I love about the story of Sarah is that, like me, her faith wavered. And you remember one time she thought, I'll take things into my own hands. And she gave her servant Hagar to Abraham to have a child, thinking that maybe she'd help God out with this, because God surely had missed something. So maybe I can help him out. Have you ever tried to do that? Don't do that. Right? Well, help God out, because you know the story of Hagar and Ishmael and how it doesn't turn out so well. But what I like about that is this. Sarah's faith was the size of the proverbial mustard seed that Jesus makes reference to. But you remember what Jesus said about the mustard seed? What did he say about the mustard seed? Faith the size of a mustard seed can do what?
Move mountains.
Move mighty mountains. And having a child late in her life was like moving mighty mountains, particularly in those days when they didn't have the technology and all that we have today. Her faith was like a mustard seed, but it was powerful and brought about powerful results because she persevered. She persevered. Our responsibility is not the outcome of our faith, it's to persevere in our faith. The outcome is really up to God. Perseverance is up to you and me. Persevere. Believing that faith in the one true good God has its own schedule. A fourth thing I notice is this. God is faithful always. God is faithful always. You can't understand the story of Abraham and Sarah if you don't know about the covenant. In Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, and 15, 1 through 5, we read the promise. I need to read it to you this morning. The Lord said to Abraham in Genesis 12, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. In Genesis chapter 15, the Lord said, do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield and your very great reward. But Abram said, Sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? And Abram said, you have given me no children. Then the word of the Lord came to him, this man will not be your heir, but a son who is your own flesh and blood will be your heir. He took him outside and said, look up at the sky and count the stars, if indeed you could count them. Then he said, so shall your offspring be. Abraham arrived at the promised land. There were no marching bands to welcome him, no banners, not even a house. What kept him going? The assurance that God is always faithful. That's what keeps us going. When it seems like we're not seeing the reward for our faith, when the outcome doesn't seem to be what we imagined or thought it would be, it's the conviction that God, our God, the one true God, is always faithful. Paul also writes about Abraham, as you know, in the the epistles of Paul. And in verse 4, Romans chapter 4 and verse 18, he says this, against all hope, Abraham in hope believed. Let me read that again. Against all hope, Abraham in hope believed. I thought, what a great description of our lives. Against all hope, we still hope. Against all reason to believe, we still believe because we're convinced in a God who is faithful. You know, that really sums up your life and mine as believers this morning. We believe in eternal life. Not only that, but as believers in Jesus, we believe in an abundant life. But you know, when you look around you, and even in your own life, you see death, don't you? I mean, there's a whole lot of death in the world. So we believe. We believe in life. We believe in life, even though we see death. This morning, as believers, we believe in love. When all we see around us, and sometimes even in our own lives, is hatred and selfishness. We believe in purpose when everything seems meaningless and vain. We believe in mercy, in grace, in forgiveness. We believe in kindness and compassion and forgiveness and humble service. We don't often see those things, but we believe in them. Because we are convinced that these items of faith, though they may be invisible, our faith is in a God who is real. A God who is real. A God who is faithful. A God who we know we can trust. God is faithful always. Surely that's the story of Abraham and Sarah. And then one more thing that stands out to me is this. Faith, we've mentioned this before in this series, faith is not foolishness. Faith is not foolishness. Many then, and probably since, have described Abraham and Sarah's actions as foolish, giving up all that they knew to go off to a land that they knew almost nothing about, trusting God to give them children when they were far beyond childbearing years. Their actions certainly were audacious, shocking, and surprising. It's important for us to note, however, that they were not fanciful. Their faith, though at times weak and frail, proceeded from a deep confidence in the Almighty God who they knew and trusted. You see, they believed in God's resurrection power. Let me take you back to Hebrews 11, 17 to 19. Let me read that again to you. He makes reference to Abraham's call to sacrifice his son. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. Even though God had said to him, it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. But I love verse 19. This is an important verse. Abraham reasoned, that's the word in the NIV, reasoned that God could even raise the dead. So in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. In other words, because Abraham determined he was going to do this, in one sense, Isaac was dead when he was walking up the mountain, right? But he received him back from the dead. As parents and grandparents, we can't even imagine what Abraham must have been thinking and feeling on that day. But Abraham was reasoning. I know a God who can do the impossible. I know a God who is always faithful. I know a God who created the universe. Remember we saw that in verse 3 of Hebrews 11? And if he created the universe, he probably has the power to bring people back from the dead, right? And so it's suggested here that Abraham is thinking, I don't know how this is going to end, but I know this. God can do amazing things. That's your life and mine, isn't it? I don't know how this is going to end. I do know how this sermon's going to end. Don't get discouraged. But I don't know how life, even the day, is going to end. But I know God is going to, we know God is going to be there, right? We know that he's faithful. We know that he's kind and he's loving and he's good. What I want you to see this morning, a lesson that I learned very early in my walk with the Lord, is this, that faith in the one true God, not faith in faith, but faith in the one true God is the most reasonable thing you will ever do. I know the world will tell you different. The world will tell you to have faith, you have to turn off your mind. You have to just blindly wander around. That's not Bible faith. That's not faith in the one true God who created us and created all things. The eternal God, the invisible God. That faith is the most reasonable thing you and I can do. Do you have faith this morning? Let's live by faith. Father, give us faith. We know and we understand that faith in the one true God, faith that changes our lives, changes our world, is a gift from you. Open our hearts, our minds, and our spirits to humbly receive it, to be filled with faith as we walk daily through our lives, as we proceed into our future, and as we long for the day when you take us home. Give us faith.